Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, we're Gene Thomas and Tim Kennelty, Master Gardener Volunteers with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties in New York State. Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We're here today with Rochelle Ashley, manager of the Destination Nursery and Garden Center, Stories Nursery in Freehold.
Welcome, Rochelle. We're excited to be having a conversation about houseplants today. With the whole COVID thing, people have been aware of what's in their homes more, and I suspect the demand for houseplants has increased along with the enforced nesting. How's the COVID phenomenon affected your business?
Actually, it's affected us in a positive way. We thought we were going to be sitting on a lot of plant material due to closures and shutdowns, but we set up outdoor registers. We had a walk-up window and you could cash out. We kept our greenhouses closed. That was our choice because we felt safer that way, and everything was new, so nobody knew what to expect. People were so grateful that we were open. A lot of people were saying, this is the only place that I go out, you know, this is my savior. And a lot of people felt cooped up in the house and they wanted to beautify their homes, and vegetable gardening was big. That was a big thing the first year. And that's been an ongoing craze anyways. Vegetable garden has definitely been picking up. We've had a lot of different types of customers than we usually have. It used to be mostly us middle-aged folks, but now it's a lot of younger people, moms coming in with their children, wanting to do projects for homeschooling, people in apartments wanting to grow microgreens on their windowsills. So we've noticed definitely younger clientele coming in these days.
So that's one of the big changes. I'm so old, I remember the houseplant mania of the 70s. And again, in the 90s, there were orchids and air-purifying plants like corn plants, which is a Dracaena, and spider plants. Then in the first decade of this century, succulents were a big thing. Then the millennials went as crazy as people were in the 70s. Then came COVID. So let's do folks a favor and talk about some of the best, read easiest, 10 or 12 houseplants to grow now.
Okay, one of the easiest plants to grow would be the bromelids. Their pineapple is a bromelade, and in nature they grow in cracks and crevices and on other plants. So they really don't grow in soil. They take all of their nutrients and their moisture in through their leaves. They're a little bit unique, as the way you water a bromelade is that you fill the cup in the center of the plant with water. Just make sure that every once a month or every couple of weeks you empty that water out, clean it out, and put fresh water in there. They also grow pups around the sides, and when the mother plant flowers, it dies. So then you can either cut the mother plant out and just keep the pups, or you can take the pups out and repot them in some fresh soil. I would recommend using like an orchid type of soil, as well as an orchid type of fertilizer in a mister. Another popular plant would be the Dracaenas. A lot of people know them as the corn plant, the dragon tree, lucky bamboo. They're very adaptable to our environment in our homes. They can take low light. They don't need to be watered that often. That's another nice plant. The great air purifier as well. There's a lot of new varieties with different types of variegations. There's the Song of India with a nice bright yellow variegation. There's Janet Craig, which is a nice compact variety. Ferns are not known as the easiest plant to grow, but there are a few varieties of ferns that are pretty well foolproof. They're the easiest ones would be the staghorn fern, bird's nest ferns, and blue star ferns. They're a little more forgiving. They're not as delicate, so if you forget to water them once, they're not going to up and die on you. Air ferns or tillandsias are actually in the bromelade family and not a fern at all. The common mistake we make with these is people put air plants in full sun, and they do not like bright light at all. Another popular plant, this one's been around for years, it's one of the first plants I ever had, would be pothos and philodendrons. There's the traditional heart-shaped philodendron with the, it's a vining plant. And then there's the ever-popular monstera that grows enormous. I have people that come in all the time looking for this plant. It's very, very popular. And we've been seeing a lot of new philodendron varieties the last few years with interesting leaf colors. We have some in the greenhouse right now with bright chartreuse green leaves. There's another variety with burgundy leaves. Philodendrons are great. They're another good air purifier. Another plant would be rubber plants. They're a member of the ficus family. I like rubber plants because they get to be a large size. People are always looking for house plants that are going to make a statement. And rubber plants are easy to grow, bright indirect light. They have some nice new variegated varieties. Some of them are green and white. Some of them have a little bit of blush of pink on them. And they grow fairly large, and they're quick to grow. Another easy plant would be the snake plant, which is also called mother-in-law's tongue. You can't kill a snake plant is what I was told. Well, some people can. They grow in bright light or low light. Lots of variegations available now. And then we have the popular spider plant. Everybody loves to grow the spider plants because they have the babies, and you can cut the babies off, and they're easy to root. You can either root them in water or you can root them in soil. One of the common problems that people complain about with spider plants are the brown tips on the edge. And usually speaking, this is caused by a couple of different things. One thing would be if you live in the city and you have a lot of fluoride in your water, they're very susceptible to fluoride and soluble salts. Another reason would be if you let them get a little too dry and then you kept them a little too wet and they have inconsistent watering. One of the best ways to remedy if you have high soluble salts or too much fertilizer is to let your plants get a good thorough drenching at least once a month. Let the water run out the bottom. It doesn't have to be a lot of water, just about a cup or so is beneficial in leaching out the soluble salts. Christmas cactus is another easy house plant, and it has the bonus of flowering. It's not actually a cactus, it's a succulent, and unlike cactus, it likes bright indirect light, not direct sun. There's Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus, and Easter cactus, and a lot of people don't recognize how to tell the difference. Most of the cactus or the Christmas cactus that we get at the holiday time are actually Thanksgiving cactus, and you can tell they're Thanksgiving cactus because they have little spiky points on the edges of their leaves. A Christmas cactus actually has smooth, and it's rectangular shaped, and the Easter cactus has smooth edges, and it's rounded at the end. So it's pretty interesting because a lot of people realize that why aren't my Christmas cactus blooming, because they could possibly have Thanksgiving or Easter cactus. One of the plants that I've been seeing a lot of and a lot more new varieties, very easy to grow, is a peperomia. It's commonly mistaken for a succulent. They're similar as they store the water in their thick leaves and they don't care to be soggy or constantly moist. The difference is they don't like direct sun. So when people come in, they say, oh, I love cactus, but I don't, and I love succulents, but I don't have a lot of sun. I point them towards the peperomias. There's lots of varieties available with variegated leaves. There's a variety called the happy bean plant that resembles a jade with succulent pea-like leaves. There's hanging varieties. There's a new one called the string of turtles, and one I've never seen before. It's called Hope, and it has round succulent leaves, and it's a hanging variety. So it's a nice plant to hang in, you know, if you have a window or a spot that doesn't have a lot of sun. I know a lot of people, one of the popular plants is the ZZ plant. This is another one that people say you cannot kill. Well, you can kill it if you overwater it, because that's one of those types of plants that doesn't like overwatering. It has very bulbous rhizomes under the soil, and they store water. So this plant in its native environment in Africa is in a desert, and it goes prolonged periods without a lot of water. So it can be not watered for a long time. It's very forgiving, too. I think I covered most of them. There are some that are houseplants that are not so easy to grow, and not my particular favorites because we can't seem to even keep them around for too long in the nursery. One would be African violets. You have to be a special kind of person, I believe, to grow African violets. My mom used to do a great job at it. She'd grow babies. One thing I know, they do like to be watered. They're a little fussy with their watering. They like to be watered from the bottom. They don't like their leaves to be wet. They don't like cold drafts. So if you really want to baby a plant, you can get African violets. I think they make a nice gift, but I very rarely see one that's been around for many years that is absolutely beautiful. Boston ferns, another plant that's not so easy to grow. They tend to dry out a little bit. They need watering quite often. They need a very humid environment, but not necessarily humid soil and humid roots. Plus, they make a mess, and I'm not particularly, they're always falling on the ground making a mess. Cactus are, I would say they're not that easy, but easy depending on your care for plants. If you have a good sunny atmosphere or a good sunny window and you don't tend to take extra care and water them too often, cactus are very easy to grow. Another plant that some people feel is not easy to grow would be a jade. I particularly think they're an easy plant. A lot of people don't realize when they're growing cactus, succulents, like a jade plant, that the windows on our homes with the new technology have a film that protects our furniture and our rugs from fading, but it's not so good for our plants that like a lot of sun. I had a beautiful old jade that I moved into a new home, and it just slowly declined, and I was right in front of the window. I couldn't understand why, and then I realized it wasn't getting the full benefit of the sun from the windows. Another plant that lots of times it's given as a gift at funerals or when someone passes away is a peace lily. And like the spider plant, the peace lily is very susceptible to the tips of the plants, of the leaves turning black or brown. And again, that's another sign of inconsistent watering or soluble salts or high fertilizer.
Okay, let's talk about houseplants and cats or kids or dogs like mine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few plants that are very toxic, and one of the plants that I mentioned that would be a great plant, everybody says is easy to grow, doesn't need a lot of light, would be the ZZ plant. And a lot of people aren't aware that it's extremely toxic to your animals. I've even read warnings on the label that I've gotten from my suppliers that say to wash your hands when you're done handling the plant. My research of it did not show it to be that hazardous to you, but it is toxic. As well as the ZZ plant, pothos, English ivies, philodendrons, diefenbachias, and peace lilies, as well as crotons, are also poisonous to mostly pets, cats, dogs, children. The reason why they're toxic, especially to cats, is they have, I believe it's called a crystal oxalate, which crystallizes in their kidneys and gives them kidney failure. One of the plants that I know is extremely poisonous to cats and can kill them would be anything in the lily family. Easter lilies especially, but daylilies from your garden. Any type of a lily family plant is toxic to.
Don't begonias have that too? Because I thought I had read the begonias.
I think you're, yes, I have read that the begonias when I was doing my research. Begonias, the same thing.
Because I had one of my dogs chomping on a begonia and it did worry me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you're in doubt, you probably want to keep the plants up or someplace where the cat or dog can't get to it if you really don't know.
Yes. Right? And you can, I mean, a quick Google search will let you know which plants you can, or you can call. We have an extensive list from the Michigan University that tells us which plants are poisonous outdoors, indoors. So we have a pretty extensive list.
That's interesting about crotons too, but I never had a croton that lived long enough to kill anything because they're really hard to grow, I think.
I find even at the nursery this time of year, I think a lot of the problem with them is that they don't like cold drafts. Because this time of year, our vents will open and we'll get a cool breeze that comes down on the plants. And next thing I know, all of a sudden one day I'll go in and all of the leaves will have fallen off.
Yes. And I guess that's true. You said with African violets, my grandmother used to grow African violets. And I think you have to have a certain gene or something to be able to grow them.
It's a grandma flower.
Yeah, it is.
I have a 30-year-old African violet.
Oh, you see, you shouldn't be admitting that, Jean.
I qualify.
Do you get it to rebloom for you, Jean?
Oh, constantly.
Yeah, good.
Anytime I feed it, a few weeks later, bam, it fills up with flowies. I'll give you some.
So you have a green. So Jean has a green thumb, obviously, because I've never been able to grow African.
Well, that's pretty much the only one that's ever been successful.
Not that this is ever my problem, because I kill a lot of houseplants, but what happens when they get to be too big? What do I do if something gets to be too big? Do I repot it? What do I trim it?
There's a couple options. You can repot it, and when you repot a plant, you want to make sure you don't put it in too large of a pot. People come in, they pick out this plant, and they fall in love with the pot, and then they want the plant to fit the pot. You don't want to go any larger than about 2 inches around from the plant. What happens is the soil will stay wetter longer and the plant doesn't root in as quickly, unless it's something that grows abundantly, you know, a house plant that grows really large quickly, like maybe a Monstera. Another option you can do is you can repot it, cut some of the top of it back, cut some of the roots off, it's called root pruning, give it some fresh soil and just put it right back in the same pot that you had it in.
So I don't just plop it in the pot and put the soil around, because that's my method usually.
No, you really want to loosen up the roots, especially if they're really compact. You want to loosen the roots up a little bit, and you can cut some of the roots off to get some activity going in the soil. And then just use a good quality potting soil. There's so many different types of potting soil. We prefer to use one that's peat-based, and it's basically peat moss, perlite, and some vermiculite. There's a lot of potting soils that I see out there that are very heavy, and it's almost like it's like dirt. And right. The plants need a nice porous and aerated soil.
And what's the biggest mistake people make with houseplants? Is it overwatering? Because I know I tend to want to just water them all the time.
Yes, definitely overwatering. What happens lots of times is they forget to water, and then they overcompensate because they've forgotten once or twice. So a good constant watering, a constant routine for watering is the best. Anywhere is between 5 to 10 days, depending on the plant. I tell people to ditch the water meters, the moisture meters. Use your finger. Stick your finger in the soil. Make sure that soil is dry about 2 to 3 inches down in the pot, not just the surface. If you let the surface of your soil dry out in between waterings, you'll also inhibit the growth of fungus gnats, because fungus gnats will breed in the top of the soil, and if it's moist, they have a perfect breeding ground. If you keep it and let it dry out, there's no breeding ground for fungus gnats. So if you have fungus gnats in your houseplant, you're either overwatering or you're letting the water sit in your saucer for too long and not emptying that water out of your saucer right away, because they breed underneath the pot and the saucer.
Tim's nodding his head in recognition.
I have many fungus gnats. I know it's one more thing to worry about, fungus gnats. Oh, that sounds terrible. I think I have them, though.
Well, a good way to find out if you have a large population of them is to take a potato, cut the potato, and put the cut side down on the soil and leave it there overnight. And when you pick it up in the morning, if you see a lot of little grotesque, translucent maggots on the underside of your potato, those are fungus larvae.
And then can I use that potato for dinner?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, just to be clear.
It's great for compost.
That's really interesting. Wow.
So if you keep the soil dry, just the top inches, you probably won't have that problem. There's a couple of methods you can use to control fungus gnats in the soil. There's a botanical mosquito dunks. It's a granular, it's a type of BT, you sprinkle it on the soil, and it naturally keeps the larvae down on your fungus gnats.
So for somebody who's got their plants outgrowing their pots and are terrified of repotting them, you have a service 1 month a year, don't you, that's available?
Well, if it's not a big secret, we do it all year long, except during our busy season. If it's really busy in May or June, we don't take on transplanting.
We'll never tell.
Almost any time of the year, you can bring your plants in. If we're busy, we'll just hold them and do it when we have the chance. Or we sometimes, if we're not busy, we'll do it while you wait. We do a nominal charge just for the pot amount of the soil. If you come into the nursery and you purchase a pot and you purchase a plant, we'll pot it for you for no charge.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds like, for somebody like me, that's perfect. Yeah. What about fertilizing plants? What's the rule of thumb for that?
The rule of thumb for fertilizing your house plants is to only fertilize them during the times that they're actively growing. So early spring, during the summertime, you want to hold off later in the fall, and not so often at all in the winter, maybe once or so through the winter. But I'd say about maybe once every 2 to 4 weeks you would fertilize them. And I would use a liquid fertilizer. There's a lot of organic ones out there. We recommend Schultz liquid fertilizer. It's inexpensive. It's easy to use. They give you a little dropper, 7 drops in a quart of water, and it's easy.
That's the one I'm feeding my African violet.
They do make one for African violets, and they make one especially for cactus and succulents as well.
And what about putting my houseplants out on my deck? Like if they like sun, do I have to ease them out there like in April or May, or do I... Do
most
it slowly?
Definitely. Most house plants like indirect light. So you don't want to take even a house plant like a palm or a jade that likes full sun. You don't want to just take them from you in your house and plop them out there because they'll probably get sunburned and do some damage. So you want to put them someplace on your deck or someplace where they get a little filtered light at first, and definitely not in the full sun.
See, I've made all the mistakes, Jean. I've gotten sunburned plants. I have fungus gnats. I don't know. I need help, I think. Yeah.
But you're making the classic mistake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, this is really helpful, I think.
And speaking of classics, you have a lot of unusual houseplants at your shop. I've seen some of the old-fashioned Victorian favorites, like Queen's Tears, which I adore, and cast iron plant, and lots of Rex begonias. Begonias can get pushy. The cast iron plant is not showy. And the Queen's Tears only blooms once a year. So are you seeing more demand for those recently? Because they're exotics. They used to be standbys.
I would say, I wouldn't know if I have a more of a call for them, but there are definitely people that are looking for the unusual, and they're looking for something that not every store has, that you can't find in, say, the box stores or your Home Depots. So we try to get in as much as we can. We have, right now, the Queen of Tears are blooming at the nursery. It's their time of year to bloom. In the greenhouse, they bloom actually for quite a while. We've had some that we'll still have them blooming like Easter time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the same plants or if we just, you know, as soon as they bloom, they seem to go out. But there's a lot of exotic plants that used to be run-of-the-mill and now are a little bit more, you know, not so common.
Well, I think there's a historical issue there, too, because George Story, who started the nursery, just turned 102 this month?
He will be 102 in February.
So we've got a good track record for those kind of plants. I think that's so exciting.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And what about terrariums? Are they big now? Is it something that people are doing? I know they were a while back, a couple of years ago.
We have call for the terrarium plants. They're really hard to find, the little small plants. Most people are interested that in the wintertime. I've tried to get plants in, but they always seem to demise with the weather. We've had them freeze on us. It's not a good time of year for shipping plants, but it's not something that's readily available, small size plants for terrariums. So it's a challenge for that.
Is the fairy garden thing still going on?
Not so much. We don't do the fairy gardens. That's one of those, it's all or nothing. You have to go big or go home, and we don't have the room to go big.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, thanks, Rochelle, for an audio tour of the houseplant world. I think it may make plant ownership a little less scary for rookies and give experienced plant tenders some ideas. I hope you'll come again soon for another Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley.
Thanks for having me.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.